I'm very grateful to be here, greatly honored to be here today. And I particularly want to thank all those at the College of the Holy Cross who were involved in bringing me here. I also want to recognize Lily Vocational Discernment Initiative and the Women's and Gender Studies and Environmental Studies programs for their efforts to bring me here. I am very, very happy to be able to share the message, especially at this campus, with young people. And it brings some nostalgia for me at the time when I myself was in college. Now, the Norwegian Nobel Committee, as already mentioned by Tom, wanted to challenge us yet again. Those of you who have followed the history of the 100 years plus organization know that every so often they change the shift as they offer the prize. And the intention is to continuously expand that concept of peace and security and to encourage us to see that in order for us to live in peace, we need to change our mindset every so often. Initially, the prize was given to people who went to the battlefield and collected dead bodies and buried them with respect. And that took a lot of courage. Or went to the field and took soldiers who were hurt, asking those who were fighting to give them a chance to pick those who were hurt in order to attend to them. Let alone, they gave prizes to people who spent a lot of time bringing parties who were in conflict to a dialogue, to a round table, so that they could stop fighting. More recently, they expanded that concept of peace by saying that peace is not just an absence of war, or a state in which we are not fighting. It is very, very important for us to work to prevent wars and conflict. And so they shifted a little bit and gave the prize to people who were working on human rights, emphasizing the need for us to respect the rights of all people in order for us to live in peace with each other. And then in the year 2004, they decided to expand that concept even further and explained that in order for us to live in peace with each other on this planet that has limited resources, that it is very important for us to learn to manage these resources responsibly and accountably, and to take in mind the future generations as well, so that they too can be able to meet the needs of their day. And that it is also very important for us to learn to share these resources more equitably. In other words, we must promote justice, economic justice, social justice. And they saw that, and as we experience every day in our lives, in our countries, even as we read about conflicts in the world, it is very important that we manage ourselves within a democratic space, what I call a democratic space, where human rights are respected, where there is space for all of us, no matter our diversity, because diversity is a fact within our species, and that all of us need to feel included, that we need to be given space for our voice, even though we may be a minority, and even though the majority may eventually have their way, that if we do this at the national level, at the regional level, at the global level, we are more likely to preempt conflicts and wars. That's what the message was. And because in our work in the Green Belt Movement, we were trying to do exactly that. They picked on our organization and our work of more than 30 years to demonstrate or to say that this is the holistic approach that we ought to embrace in order for us to live in peace with each other. And indeed, in my own situation back home, I saw on many occasions where people, communities, tribes, as we sometimes would call them, will fight and kill each other over water, whether it is water for human consumption or water for livestock. If there is no grass on this side of the country, people with their livestock will move to other places where there is grass or where there is water. And if they are not allowed access, they will fight and people will be lost. But quite often we say these are tribal fights. And quite often when it is written, it is given the impression that these are African tribes fighting. They always fight. But indeed, they are fighting over resources. Who will access these resources? Who will manage these resources? Who will be excluded from these resources? Those who feel excluded, sooner or later, will seek justice. And that's when conflict will ensue. Now, in our work, we tried very hard in the beginning to just do a simple thing, plant trees. And we were responding to the local needs of people, especially women, who said they needed firewood, they needed clean drinking water, they needed nutritious food, and they needed an income. And this came at a time, around 1972, 1973, those of you who are about my age will remember, that the United Nations had decided to have the very first women's conference in Mexico in 1975. And so the world was encouraging women to meet and identify the agenda that women would discuss in Mexico. And so in Kenya, we were meeting under the auspices of the National Council of Women of Kenya. And as we met, we all brought our agendas. I was representing the Kenya Association of University Women. So I brought the agenda of academic members of staff, female members of staff. And we had our own complaints about how we were not being given the same terms of service as our male colleagues. But there was this group of women from the countryside, and they had their agenda. And they were talking about firewood, about food, about very basic needs. And perhaps because of my education in biological sciences, I quickly connected it with environmental degradation. The other reason why it focused on me very quickly, or it became clear to me very quickly, is because I grew up, and you'll find this when you read the book, I grew up in an environment that was endowed with the very needs or with the very stuff that they were looking for. It was a green countryside. It had a lot of firewood. Indeed, I used to collect firewood for my mother. We had clean drinking water. We used to fetch it from the river and drink it. We didn't have to boil it. It was so clean. And we were not poor. We did not have cash as such, but we did not consider ourselves poor. But these women, some of these women came from that same area. So I wanted to know what had happened to the area that I knew as a child. Now, I don't want to revisit childhood because that will take a long time. And when you read the book, you will see the kind of environment I grew up in. But I do want to say that it was an environment that really inspired me. Because there I talk about the clean water, I talk about the water being so clean that frogs would lay their eggs there and I would play with the eggs. And I thought that the eggs were beads and that I could harvest them and put them around my neck. And I played with tadpoles, even though I did not know that there was a connection between the frog eggs and the tadpoles. That waited until I was in high school to learn about the life cycle of the frogs. But later on, when I started understanding what was happening to my environment, I could make these connections and understand that something very serious was happening. Because as we know, that some of these animals, like the frogs, like the eggs, like the tadpoles, and some other little animals that live in clean, fresh water, they are indicators of a clean environment. And the minute the environment is polluted, they are the first to disappear. So when we know that, we can tell when our environment is not healthy, even for ourselves. So anyway, I listened to these women, and I knew that many of us would not go to Mexico. We didn't have the money. I did not go to Mexico. And many of these women I was talking to did not go to Mexico. But I suggested to them, let us plant trees. I did not suggest to them, let us plant trees to start a movement. I was starting a small initiative that would probably last 2-3 years. So that we could have firewood. But when I asked the women to plant trees, they said they didn't know how to plant trees. Because in that environment, God planted the trees through the birds, through the domestic animals, through wildlife, through the wind. People were not planting trees. The population was low. Cultivation of the fields was very small by comparison because it was subsistence agriculture. So everywhere there were trees and there were woodlots. But now, the women were saying there were no trees. Where had all the trees gone? Well, within the period that I was here in America, between the period of 1960s and 1967, by the time, 70s, by the time I am now confronting this situation at the National Council of Women, we have become independent and we have introduced cash crops. Coffee, tea, sugarcane, pyrethrum, new crops that came with the settlers. And these were crops that we could grow and sell to the outside world in order to become rich and be developed. But we were doing it at the expense of clean drinking water and at the expense of the main source of energy for the countryside people. And so what they were doing is encroaching on steeper hills, encroaching on the forests, encroaching on riverbeds. And as they encroached in these areas, they removed the vegetation that was holding the soil. So quite clearly, during the rainy season, the rivers would be silted. Too much silt, too much of our top soil was disappearing into the rivers and finally into the lakes and oceans. And when they get into the oceans, they destroy marine life. Because when God created marine life, He did not intend for them to have to do anything with the soil. The soil was supposed to be terrestrial, and the fishes and them who were in the water were supposed to be swimming in clean, salty water or fresh water.